market,
the S&P,
the ASX,
stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that is still recovering from Christmas. I'm Scott Phillips, and with me is Dr. Anir Bhanumathi. G'day, Doc.
Good day, Captain. How are you?
I'm very, very, I don't know how I am, because we're pre-recording this podcast. It's the 28th of December. You should be hearing this, but we didn't record it on the 28th, because even fools deserve a little bit of time off over Christmas.
Absolutely.
I think you're overseas, aren't you, at the moment?
I am, somewhere.
There you go, somewhere overseas.
Somewhere overseas. I might be in India at that time, actually,
if I'm. Nice. So. I hope you're enjoying yourself. I'm at home, hopefully working. I should be working. I'm going to work through, but we're not doing the podcast because you're away. So, Phils, this is a pre-recorded special podcast. We love doing these ones. These are a full-on, all-mailbag, all-the-time edition.
Love that.
Motley Fool Money.
We love the questions.
So let's get on with it, mate. I want to get straight into this. Mm-hmm. We'll go through some questions and hopefully give people the answers they're looking for. As always, Phils, while you're listening to this, frankly, when we come back in January, we're going to be desperate for some content. So there's a lot of corporate news around this time of year. So if you have any questions, please email us, info@fool.com.au, or hit us up on Twitter. That's the best place because we can interact and it's kind of fun. @TheMotleyFoolAU is our Twitter handle.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a handle. How impressive do I sound?
I love the handle.
I'm all over the social medias.
Handle.
Oh, I'm Twittering and I don't Instagram because I don't even know what that is really. Mm. But I Facebook. So, is anyone on Facebook anymore?
Boo.
Anyway, let's get on. So, @TheMotleyFoolAU is our corporate handle. I am @TMFScottP. That's The Motley Fool. So, TMF Scott P. And Docky's Anir Bhanumathi. All one word. AnirBanMahanti. Anir Bhanumathi. All right, let's get on with it, mate. We got a question. I don't even know who this is from because we pasted it in. So,
Oh, that's unfortunate. Hey?
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Hi there, guys. Long-time listener and sadly second-time writer with a quick question about capital gains. If I'm selling a portion of my position in a company, but have recently added to the position within a year, am I still able to claim CGT or capital gains tax? The additional shares would contribute around 5 to 10% of my total investment. So I'm curious if there's a blanket rule or something a little more complicated. Thanks, guys. And Doc, hope you're feeling a little better soon. I think he means me.
Yeah, I think he means you.
Unless you've been sick. Maybe you have been sick between now and the 28th.
Maybe. That's
it. I hope not for your sake. If you can see the future, please get back in touch and let us know which stock's going up.
Maybe
next
I had
year.
Too much spicy food.
You never know. You never know. I had a really, really good vindaloo the other day. I told you about that.
Oh, yeah, you did.
It was really good. Anyway. Keep up the foolish goodness. Thank you very much, listener X, who I've copied in here without copying your name. I do desperately apologize. I'm sorry. All right. So here's the question in a nutshell, Doc. You're selling a position. You bought some more than a year ago. You bought some within the year.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to capital gains tax?
Okay. First, general advice. This is what I think will happen. Always check with your accountant for these sort of things.
That is always the best advice.
That is the best advice, and that's the correct advice.
Yes, indeed.
Because I am not an accountant. I think what will happen is, suppose you bought 100 shares. Let's assume you bought 100 shares 1 year ago. And you
two years ago to make sure we're over the year.
You bought it 2 years ago, and you bought 50 more
six months back.
Okay. Now you're selling those, 150 shares. I would think you would treat the 100 for long-term capital gains.
Correct.
And the 50 as short-term capital gains.
That is exactly
or
the way it works.
Or loss or whatever it is. Yep. You just treat them as different lots.
Correct.
And that's the way I think is the correct way.
Yep. So the capital gains tax rules apply to the tranches of shares that you have bought when you bought them. So you break up the shares. If 100, to Doc's point, are over a year old, then they fall into the long-term capital gains tax regime. You get a discount. A tax discount for those capital gains, and the shares you sold more recently, or sorry, you bought more recently, are subject to short-term capital gains. In other words, there's no discount for long-term holdings. So, yep, absolutely. That's exactly the rule.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Next question. Hi, Scott and Anirban.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. Oh, this one's from Chris. Excellent. Oh, no, it's not from Chris. We've cut Jason. Jason. There we go. Sorry, Jason. Hi, Scott and Anirban. I've enjoyed listening to your podcast. He's listened to the rules.
Yeah.
Best way to get mentioned is
to tell
us how much you love the podcast. He didn't say I love it, though. He said I enjoyed listening. Is that good enough?
Oh, we'll let it pass this time. Next time, Jason, just say you love it.
You love the podcast.
And share the podcast with someone you love.
There you go. there's the new rules. We're upping the ante here. I love your podcast, and I've shared it with a friend, and
exactly.
I have a question.
Exactly.
All right. I've enjoyed listening to your podcast and have taken away some very useful tips and insights. Oh, he's really redeemed himself there.
Mm-hmm.
He's taken away some very useful tips and insights into investing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from our podcast.
Oh, wouldn't you think so?
Oh, maybe he's listening to someone else's.
Oh, no, it's our podcast.
You sure?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
We do our best.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a question for you, dude. When you look at a potential company to invest in, how much value do you place in the future outlook section of the annual report? How much value do you place in the exec biography section? And has one or both ever tipped you over to pressing the buy or sell button? So let's take these separately, mate. So how much value do you place in the future outlook section in an annual report?
Man, this is a really hard question, actually. It's a tough question, Jason. And I'll try to do as much justice as I can. Because, again, I'm onto this nuance thing. I'm going to try to be more nuanced again.
Not again.
Okay, I'll try. Here's the thing. Okay. My cynical view could be that, you know, every company's job is to sell their company as the greatest company on the planet, right?
Yes.
So if that's the case, the future outlook section is going to be very, very rosy.
Right.
So you have to make an informed judgment based...
Skeptical?
Well, be a bit skeptical. Okay. Be a bit skeptical. You know, if you're always super skeptical, then, you know, everything is going to look bad and, you know, the world is always coming to an end and then you'll never do anything, right? I mean, you know, you shouldn't be like, you know, everything, this is all going to be, you know, false. You don't think like that. But you look at what the company has done in recent times.
Yep. So let's separate this out because this is why I wanted to get to the bottom of it, right?
Yeah.
So the future outlook section of the annual report specifically.
Yeah.
You're saying...
Well, I'm saying that look at what the business has done over the recent past.
Right.
Do you think, looking at the recent past, they have the ability to deliver on the future that they think they're going to deliver? That's number one.
There you go. Okay.
The number two is that you have to also think about, you have to think more broadly about the industry that the company is in. You have to think about the competitive pressures in the industry. You have to think about the resources they need to execute on that plan. So there's a whole, you know, whole slew of things that matter when you're thinking about the future. I mean,
Can I put words in your mouth?
Yeah.
I reckon what I'm hearing you saying is I don't care. I care a little bit about the future outlook. I care a whole lot more about the actual future. In other words, what the company says is interesting. What I think about the future is far more useful.
Yeah. As I said, you will always have the best.
I got the easy job, man. I have to summarize what you just said. You've got to think of it
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's the thing. So I take everything with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But, you know, you really have to conceptualize the company and think about the future.
We have seen plenty of future outlooks that promise the world and deliver absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And we've seen some that have underpromised and over-delivered.
Over-delivered, yeah.
And some that are kind of there or thereabouts. I'm going to attempt to answer this bit, and then I'll throw it back to you again. I place almost zero value on the future outlook section, other than the extent to which they're telling you strategically where they're intending to head. So you get a sense of what their framework is, if you like, and then I'll think about that framework in the context of, as you said, the future that I expect for the company and the industry and the category and the market and all that kind of stuff. So if Woolworths says, and guess what, we're going into 3D printing, I'm going to say, well, okay, yeah, and they'll say, and we'll make $15 billion out of it and we'll be the largest 3D printer in the world. Do I care about any of that stuff? No. Do I care about the strategic direction? Yes. And that's the bit I will probably try and stress test and see whether I believe it or not.
Cool. Agree with that.
Executive biographies, mate. So the people running the business. You've looked at the annual report.
Yes.
You've kind of given a little bit of a glance at the future outlook. Said, okay, well, I kind of get that. All right. I'm still interested to some degree. Who's running this place? And you find out there's a bloke called Ned Kelly, and you're like, well, not sure about that one. Or Alan Bond, maybe, or Christopher Skase. And you start to think, well, how much value do you put in the biographies of the executives that are running the place? And at what level?
Okay. So, I mean, I don't actually care too much about what's written in the biography.
Right.
But I do care a lot about who's running the business.
Okay.
Right. And
the biography is more puff stuff?
Yeah, the biography has stuff. You know, I have an MBA, I have a PhD, and, you know, I have...
Well, some of us have PhDs.
Some have, you know, PhDs.
The rest of us... I'm the least qualified person in my house now. Do you know that? My wife's a doctor.
Yeah, your wife's a PhD.
My mother-in-law's got a master's degree.
Oh, there we go.
And my 22-year-old young bloke's got a master's.
Yeah.
I've got a graduate diploma. I'm literally other than my 5-year-old.
But you have a podcast.
anyone can have a podcast these days. We are living proof that anyone can have a podcast, mate.
And you're on TV. There we go. See,
random tangent. My 5-year-old, when I'm on TV on Sunday mornings, his mum says, do you want to watch Daddy on TV? He says, no, thanks. He watches Power Rangers. Rather, his dad on TV.
I don't blame him.
That's how, whoa.
Come on, he's a 5-year-old.
Dear, oh dear. That was harsh. Merry Christmas to you too, pal.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Okay. Tell me about what you think about executives.
So I think executives, people running the business, are very, very important. So who is the CEO, the chairman, the CEO? How do they act? Do they act like owners?
Yep.
Do they have integrity? Mm-hmm. Do they just say stuff, or do they actually do stuff?
Yeah, right.
So you can, I think all of those things matter instead of everything else. Mm-hmm. And of course, if somebody, for example, a serial entrepreneur, and if I'm looking for high growth, kind of risky, high reward, high risk type of business, that will play into my mind in the sense that, yes, if I know this guy has done this and this, at least they have gone through the cycles of innovating, raising money and so on and so forth. So
track record matters,
but it's not just what the words are. So, you have to do a bit of digging around. So the people matter, not necessarily what's written, and you need to find out what they, what they really are, which is really hard sometimes because,
Which
is important because, we do a lot of company interviews and things like that, right, mm-hmm. with management. But one of the things that I found is that, after every meeting, I come across very impressed with the company.
Yes.
Because most managers are good salespeople.
That's what they're hired for,
and
right?
This is what they're supposed
to do. And most of their backgrounds are in sales. That's exactly. The point. Great salespeople getting promoted to run the company.
So, there's been maybe one or two CEOs that say, maybe that was not that impressive, but they were very honest.
Uh-huh.
But most of them come across and say, hey, this is the best company I have seen in recent times. So, you've got to have some perspective there and take that into account.
Completely agree. There are also some people who actually don't pay any attention to management at all, by the way, and just look at the business itself and the economics. The Buffett's got a great quote about when a management for reputation for brilliance meets a company with a reputation for bad economics, it's the reputation of the company that remains intact. In other words, it's very, very hard for even the best manager to fix a terrible business.
Absolutely.
Also, by the way, harder for a terrible manager to destroy a great business, though it's possible. As you say, though, Doc, the more the degree to which the business is trying to innovate, grow, disrupt, the more store you need to place in the person running the business. Mm-hmm. I couldn't run Tesla to save myself. Elon Musk is doing a spectacular job, right?
He is awesome.
Sorry, I mentioned it. All right, we're moving on. Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM. We got a question from Chris, who says, hi guys, enjoy the podcast. Listened in on the Microsoft v. Apple discussion last week, a couple of weeks ago now, but was a bit disappointed there was no mention of the Xbox. Now, I'm not sure if Chris is an unhappy gamer or he genuinely thinks the Xbox should be mentioned for its value to the business. What's your take on the $100 billion industry, and is it a smart place to invest? So this is a kind of cool question. So, we talk about Microsoft, we think Office, we talk about Apple, and we think, I don't think about Apple at all, actually, if I can avoid it. It's not true. But to some degree, though, the Xbox is part of the Microsoft story.
Mm.
It's certainly been, once upon a time, it was the fight for the living room, it was called, and Xbox was supposed to be the great device that was supposed to be the home media center, a la Sony's PlayStation, and everyone's given it a go to some degree. No one's really conquered the living room, which we'll talk about later on the podcast. I'm fascinated by the fact no one's been able to come up with a solution for that. Anyway. What's your take on the gaming industry? I'm not talking gaming here about gambling, but video gaming industry.
Yeah.
So thinking about the purveyors of the boxes and the purveyors of the games.
Right.
How do you think about electronic games?
Okay. So electronic games, huge market. As he said, huge market. So, I give Chris full credit for, pointing that out.
Mm-hmm.
In the Microsoft story, it's one piece of the Microsoft pie. Mm. It doesn't matter that much. I mean, everything matters. They all add up, but it's not like that significant.
Yep.
So if there are many ways to play the video game video game market or the gaming market, one of the interesting facts I like to mention is the biggest gaming company is not a gaming company that you would think of. The biggest gaming company in the world is Tencent in China.
That's true. So
if you want to play the gaming industry, there are many other pure players like Activision Blizzard and so on and so forth. Electronic Arts, Microsoft is Microsoft is a cloud play now, really.
Yeah.
And that's why we didn't talk about Xbox in that context. As I've said many times, I have huge respect for what Microsoft has achieved, and again we have talked about this in podcasts.
Yep.
I think what they've done shows many things about how to run a great blue chip sort of thing. And and how to transform yourself. So
yeah,
I think the gaming industry is great. I think it's very important. As our internet bandwidths have improved, as we have gone more mobile, this is just becoming more and more important.
Right.
Yeah, a great place to be.
So in short, though, you're saying that Xbox doesn't really contribute a whole lot of value to Microsoft as a business.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not like a big dial mover. It's important for them, but it's, you know, like, they do many other things. They have Surface computers, right? Is it a dial mover for them? Not really, but yeah, it's important for them to be there.
Strategically, it's a place.
For them to be there.
And it may still be that eventually an Xbox or a competitor wins the living room. So you kind of want to be in that space with some, but you know, a finger in that pie somewhere.
Yeah,
mate, do you have a preferred games business?
You know, I am actually not a gamer.
Okay.
What
about as an investor? Is there one you kind of do you?
I think Activision Blizzard is really good. I personally own Tencent.
Okay.
I like it largely for other reasons as well, because of its dominance in the China market, because of its WeChat platform and so on and so forth. But I do believe gaming is an important platform. And Activision Blizzard is a really good. It's a company that's actually on your scorecard.
There you go.
And I really like it.
Very good. I'm glad you like it.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, let's move on to something completely different, from electronic games to commodities. Derek asked us a question. He said, "Hey guys, I'm having trouble finding a good commodity ETF or exchange traded funds. Can you please list a few and examine them if possible? Cheers, Derek." Should I read my reply or do you want to read my reply?
You read the reply.
I said, "G'day, Derek. We tend not to be particularly positive on commodities, but we'll see what we can dig up." Get commodities, dig.
Oh,
it was funny when I wrote it.
So now that you wrote that, you know, I have to actually dig up something.
No, look, I
don't have a view, actually, big view on commodities. Unfortunately, Derek, I mean, it's not, I really don't think I have anything to really offer much.
No, I think that, look, to Doc's point, I completely agree, Derek. I think, look, we don't have any mining companies in any of our scorecards, and if we did, that's a very large jump then from the miner to the commodity itself. You're relying purely on price movement there. At least with the mining companies, you've got some sense of operational excellence and profitability, and kind of, you know, you mentioned before, Doc, kind of past history, the ability to operate a mine well and cheaply and cost effectively is a good indicator of future operational success, even if not profitable success, because you've got to bet on the price. Commodity ETFs are all about the price. Mate, look, our best advice is, frankly, if you're going to, well, I would say my best advice in general, people, is don't try to play the game. I don't think it's a smart way, and I'm not saying you're not smart, Derek, but I don't personally think it's a smart way to try and make money in the share market. There are many, many better ways, I think. What I would say, though, if you're going to do it, is, as always with every ETF, fees matter hugely. So if you think you can get the commodities right, then great. By all means, do it if you want to, and if you think you're going to be right about it, but keep your fees low. That's the best advice I can give you around commodities, and any ETF is the lower the fees, the better, because over compound periods of time, fees can eat literally, you know, 20, 30, 40% of your returns if you're not careful. So keep fees low, and good luck.
Real money advice from real people, not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Last question from the Steady Investor on Twitter, at @Bogle_investor.
That's so a good name.
We
like
that
name,
don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he says, was just listening to yesterday's podcast, again, a couple of weeks ago, regarding, I should probably do this better, shouldn't I? Was listening to a recent podcast, so much better, I'll edit the other bit out later, regarding your thoughts on margin loans to invest in ETFs, which was kind of the conversation we were having.
Yes.
There's a no margin call loan from NAB. And the Steady Investor says, does a no-margin call loan make any difference to your opinion? Now, just to really quickly recap, I don't borrow to invest in shares, because when margin calls will happen when you least expect them. And also, while we all think we're going to be cleverer than the other guy, by definition, most of us aren't. And the chance that you get margin called, you have to sell your shares at a low price, can really destroy most or all of your capital. It's a really, really risky and necessary way to play the game. But in this case, there's a product from NAB that doesn't have a margin call as such. It's called NAB Equity Builder, for those who care. And he asked, you know, does that change our view? Now, I had a bit of a look at this product. I don't know if you've had a chance to have a look at it, Doc. I look at this particular product. There is no margin call, but NAB reserves the right to reduce the facility. Right? Now, if you think about
LVR?
Well, no, the size of the facility.
Okay.
So let's say you've got a loan, you borrow $100,000 to buy some shares.
Yeah.
NAB could universally decide, and it may not, right? So I'm not ascribing any any actions or intent to NAB at all. But in the realm of possibility, NAB could, when the market went terribly, say, yeah, so Doc, I've decided to reduce your facility to 30 grand.
That's a margin
now,
call.
Now, well, it's not a margin call in the sense that they're not penalizing you for the shares having fallen in value at all. They could do it when the market's up, by the way. So it may not happen. It may not happen at the wrong times. But the reality is they reserve the right to simply reduce the amount they're prepared to lend to you. Now, in that circumstance, it's reasonable to assume they would require their money to be repaid down to that facility level at a reasonably short notice in a reasonably short amount of time. I haven't seen the details of that. But in some circumstances, there would be scenarios where, well, I don't say your shares aren't worth a certain percentage of the equity value, which is when a margin call happens. They could, it seems, by my reading, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems to my reading, they could simply say, yeah, we're lowering the value of your loan. So sell some shares or give us some more cash to meet that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it's not a margin call, but it's effectively the same, has the same impact, has the same dollar cost, dollar impact as a margin call. So
yeah, if that's true, that's basically a pseudo margin
call.
Well,
yeah, again, we don't know if they do it right. It's not automatic. The other thing is not automatic, right? So margin call is automatic. If your shares fall below a certain percentage, then you have to pay it back or they will sell your shares immediately. So that's automatic. This is less automatic and probably less, less harsh probably than a margin call. But we don't know the circumstance under which they may exercise their right to reduce the facility. Again, it's one of those things where you're placing your future prosperity in the hands of somebody else. And again, the more control you give someone else who can, with a stroke of a pen, virtual or otherwise, change your financial future or your financial current circumstances, I just don't reckon you need to borrow. So look, maybe NAB never does it. Maybe it's all wonderful. Maybe it's all fine. I don't want to be the one who finds out they've halved my loan facility and I have to pay back half of it when the market's down 40%.
And you'll have to look at what the interest rate is on that loan as well, right? I mean, if the interest rate is high, it basically eats into your returns.
It's an okay rate from memory, but yes, it does ask you to eat in your returns. And in a negative environment, you're actually making a loss, right? So you want to be careful how that works.
Yeah.
All right. We hope you've enjoyed our special kind of between Christmas and New Year mailbag special. We hope you had a wonderful Christmas. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Be safe, be sensible on New Year's Eve, please. We don't have that many listeners. We can afford to lose any. So please do the right thing. Look after yourselves. Look after your mates. Have a wonderful New Year. We'll be back in the New Year in 2019.
Absolutely.
A little more foolish goodness. But before you go, if you're listening to this, maybe you've subscribed, maybe you haven't, hit the subscribe button on your podcast player or go to Apple's, what is it?
iPod? Beautiful.
What do they call it?
In a podcast.
Apple
podcast.
Podcast app, right?
We have
or download one from the Android, from the Apple, the Google, Apple, geez, how am I going? The Google Play Store. Find a great podcast app. Subscribe so you don't miss any of our goodness in 2019. We'll be back bigger, better, and well, probably the same size and about as good. So
I don't know.
Bigger, better. We'll be back anyway with some foolish goodness next year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.